Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe.
Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.
Hey everybody, I'm Larry Port with another episode of Dream Job Cafe. I have with me today Ed Case, an old friend of mine, who is the director of product design and UX at a company called Vantica. Ed, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, happy to do it, Larry. Excited to talk to you.
Yeah, well, this is such a great field. I always feel like this is a great field because I think it's interesting. It involves talking to people. It involves design. It involves technology. For me, I don't know, it doesn't get much cooler. It's one of those jobs that I kind of maybe wish I could have done, but never got around to it. So tell me a little bit about, like, what is a UX designer?
A UX designer is kind of the glue between, you know, the outcomes that you're looking for and the experience that you hope to deliver for your user, you know, and it oftentimes involves taking something that's pretty complicated and complex and making it very intuitive and easy to figure out and understand, which sometimes is pretty tricky. So that's our job, is to really advocate for the user, but to also craft and create like elegant and pleasurable experiences as people use application software to do things that can be very mundane and sort of repetitive, you know, removing friction and making things as intuitive as possible.
Right. Okay. So UX, I should probably clarify, it stands for user experience, right? Yep. So a user experience designer, is that different than a user interface designer?
It is. You know, there's a lot of overlap there because, you know, a lot of, you know, user interface is actual like components and elements that you're interacting with, your buttons, you know, your toggles, things like that. And those have to work and behave a certain way. But those obviously influence the experience, right? So there is a lot of overlap there. And typically what I've found is that the UX designer is responsible for both from a design standpoint, maybe not necessarily an implementation standpoint, but definitely from a design standpoint.
So can you like help us understand, like, so I can maybe point you to some examples when we were working together on the Rocket Matter product, or maybe something that you do in Vantica. Or maybe it's just something that like people know from being online, like whether it's like checking out of a shopping cart or whatever. But can you take an example of like an existing kind of like complex thing and how a user experience designer has like made it more simple for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody has used software and been frustrated by it, right? Like maybe on a mobile device, like something just super straightforward and rudimentary is like, you know, you go to tap a button and like, it's super tiny, like the tap area is super tiny and you can't necessarily hit it. You know, that's something that a user experience designer thinks about, right? Like, is it easy to accomplish what you want to do? And is the interface easy to interact with? So just something like making controls the right size, the right scale, making fonts easy to read. That's something on a real basic level. But then, you know, if you think about more complex software, you know, there's like the law of irreducible complexity where you can only make something simple to a certain point before it's just not simple. So that's where, you know, you can design experiences where the system starts to take on some of that burden and make things easier for the user. So that's where the user experience designer, a lot of what they're thinking about is not necessarily what the user sees, but what's happening on the system side as well. So, you know, I think you always see software where, you know, there's many different types of software to maybe draft a fantasy football team, right? And somebody has used one ESPN and then you use another one. You're like, wow, these things were a lot easier to do and accomplish. So I think there's a, you know, definitely an aspect of that where it comes to like iterating on existing designs, what works well, what doesn't work well. But as far as like a concrete example, I mean, that's one that comes to mind is just, you know, is an app something that you're 65, 70 year old mother can use and interact with and not have to call you five times to do it, you know?
That's true. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of certain things like a lot of like, you know, when I have these TVs and I think they're made by Samsung and I have some made by LG and they have like Netflix and Prime Video built in. But then I also have like an Apple TV box. And using that thing is like so much easier to use than the little like remote controls with the TV. Yeah.
And Apple's really good at user experience. But, you know, when you think about TVs, right, and like having to, you know, address or approach data entry on a TV, like you want to sign into your Netflix or your YouTube account from your TV, like that was always super clunky, painful, you know, using the arrow keys to like type letters. And then you have like this QR code, right, that just magically appears and you scan it with your phone and you're whisked into this application and all that friction is gone. Like that's a great example of user experience design and how it can really dramatically affect and change an outcome.
I know that there's some like human psychology interview aspects of it. And then there's also a lot of like design and like wireframing aspects of it. Like, what are the tools of the trade? Like, what all do you use to get this job done?
Yeah, I mean, user research is a huge part of it. Just understanding your user, understanding the jobs to be done. And if you're in a large organization, you might have a UX researcher. What I've seen a lot, though, is, again, it falls on the UX designer to kind of wear all those hats. So that's one aspect of it. Then you have the tools that you use to actually build and create designs. And, you know, those are constantly kind of evolving and changing and that sort of thing. So, you know, the user research side is huge. And then also pressure testing and validating ideas as you start to iterate and, you know, getting those back in front of users and really making sure that you're on the right path with what you're building is super important as well. So, you know, there's definitely cycles to it, you know, from early ideas to delivery. My design might change, you know, 5, 10, 15 times, depending on how it's validated, how it's pressure tested during that discovery and validation phase.
Now, I talked to different people that have similar jobs, or they're in the kind of like software product delivery space. So I talked to a product manager, which is our friend Alejandro, and yep. I also spoke with an information architect. So can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about like where the overlap is and where the delineation is of, you know, project manager, information architect, user experience designer?
Yeah, I think, you know, Alejandro, I think had some really good sort of depiction of the product manager. And, you know, it's different in different organizations, right? Like you could be in this empowered teams model where the designer works very closely with the product manager and is making a lot of those decisions, but their workload or sort of bucket is more along the lines of what the user is going to actually touch and feel and interact with. Those two roles are very tightly coupled, though. And then when it comes to an information architect, I haven't worked with an information architect personally. I think that would be an amazing experience, though, and just kind of what they could bring to the table. But when it comes to the PM and the designer, you know, there are situations where the designer is more of an order taker and are just kind of, you know, handed requirements to sort of bring to life. And then there's situations where you're in a more empowered teams model where the designer's working hand in hand with the PM day in and day out. They're going to the same discovery and validation sessions and they're problem solving together. And where that line is, like I mentioned, is when it comes to the actual visual elements and the design, that's where the designer sort of takes over, runs with it, and starts sprinting towards engineering and getting, you know, the feature or whatever it is that you're building to a state where we can hand off to engineering.
Yeah, I think also like maybe in startups, it wouldn't be uncommon for the product manager and the user experience designer to be the same person. You know, it's a lot of work, but that's the nature of being in a startup, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, and I know we'll touch on that a little bit later when it comes to how roles are sort of evolving and changing with technology and the way things are sort of emerging and transitioning. So yeah, I think there's some interesting things we can touch on as we get to that side of it.
Let's go into your history, because we're talking a lot about like, I mean, I think one very interesting thing about you is not only have you designed software, you've designed golf courses and you've been a sculptor. So tell me about your background and where were you? Did you want to become a user experience designer when you were in high school? Like, how did this whole thing play out?
You know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do in high school. I went to an art magnet. I always loved to draw. I always loved to create things and sort of bring things to life out of materials. That was something that always was super interesting to me. And I was big into comic books and the way that they could use visuals to like tell a story, right? So I went to an art school in high school. And that was awesome. But they really pushed you away from any sort of like trade driven design or art. You know, it was very much fine arts focused. So, you know, that was where my comic book art was sort of put in the waste bin because it wasn't real art. So that was interesting. But, you know, from there, I went to art school and, you know, learned and studied. And the first year of art school is kind of like a, you know, a boot camp where They're basically throwing you through the ringer, trying to, you know, whip you into shape from an artistic standpoint. But I went into sculpture because, you know, sculpture, you could basically use any medium. You know, like if I wanted to use ceramics, like I didn't have to be a ceramics major, I could use ceramics. If I wanted to do a painting, I could do that. If I wanted to work in bronze or metal or woodworking, everything was available. So that's why I chose sculpture. And it's interesting, like, you know, I don't work a lot anymore in the fine arts, but the things that were really powerful and meaningful in that experience were, you know, having an idea and then figuring out the best materials to bring it to life and convey and elicit the response that you're looking for with the idea, right? And it could be something political. It could be something just sheer beauty and elegance, like that sort of thing. So that's where, when I graduated from school, I was in a band and we needed a website. And I started playing around with code and websites. And I was like, wow, like this is like the perfect material because it's free and you can create anything you want out of thin air and bring it to people and have them interact with it and sort of change their experience. So when I started playing around with code and applications and websites, like it kind of took off for me and it really clicked. I was like, yeah, I think this is what I was meant to do, because it really combined so many things I was interested in and was extremely fulfilling. The golf course side of it, my dad was a golf course architect. So out of school, I went and worked for an architectural sculpture company. I did that for a couple of years. It was a grind. It was awesome. I was sculpting lion heads and fountains and capitals for like million-dollar homes in Palm Beach. That company I worked for went belly up and my dad needed some help in his golf course design business. So I started working with him doing that. And that was awesome. You know, that was a really cool experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But all throughout that time, I was still building websites. I was still playing around with code. I was still designing things. And that's when I decided to kind of go out on my own and start my own web design business. So did that for a couple of years. And then that brought me to Rocket Matter, where things really took off for me because I got to work on real live software and not just, you know, websites or small widgets and things that people would use on a much smaller scale. So, you know, this was something that people were running their entire business on.
Yeah. Well, it's a very cool thing. And what's interesting about it is like, and I don't know if you can speak to this at all, but like when people do go to art school, there's this, you know, the cliche of the starving artist, but you're anything but that. You know, you've had a successful career. I mean, are there a lot of jobs like this? Is this unique in the arts where you can use a like a visual or tactile kind of arts background and make a good living off of it?
There's a few, you know, you have graphic design, you have, you know, which there's a lot of use for that in like the marketing space and things like that. And you have textile design. I know a lot of people that majored in fiber and are, you know, designing textiles and fashion and clothing. But, you know, there's a very small percentage of artists who get a degree that go on to like display work in galleries and, you know, do really well doing that. You know, that's like, you know, hitting the lottery almost. So that's something I had to figure out pretty quick, was like, hey, how can I take this skill set that I have and be able to support a family, right? And there are not a ton of options, I feel, that are as viable as a career in software design or user experience design and product design. I actually tried to advocate with some of my classmates, like, hey, you should really try this. Like, it's awesome. It's fulfilling. There's a real visual element to it. Like, having that eye for design is really valuable, but I wasn't super successful in those efforts.
So, I mean, your designs are like really sophisticated. What about for, and that's a good angle for maybe somebody who's interested in the arts and wants to have a career. What about for somebody who maybe is not so strong in art? Maybe their talents are in like dealing with people or so on and so forth. Yeah. Like, does not having the artistic background preclude you from becoming a UX designer? No,
I don't think so. Not at all. I think understanding people and understanding human behavior and having empathy for users are stronger traits that translate really well to product design. But I do think there, for me, in my experience, I do think there needs to be something there where, you know, the person likes sketching or they have an eye for interior design or fashion design, or, you know, there's something about that they can recognize and appreciate a really well put together design. I think that's kind of a necessity, and it could be manifested in many different ways. It doesn't necessarily have to be a training in fine arts. Like, I've met tons of people who, you know, didn't study fine arts, and I'll see the way they think and the way they work and even a sketch that they did. And you could see it right away. Like, they just kind of have it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that's a great way of putting it. As long as you can appreciate it, you have a sense of like balance and symmetry and, you know. So let me ask you, okay, what is a typical day like for you? Is it 9 to 5? Is it, or are you working all hours of the day? What's this job like?
You know, I think as you come in entry level, it's probably more of a 9 to 5 job. You can get away with that in most situations. But, you know, you have releases, you have big features you're finishing, and it's going to require you to probably push outside of those boundaries. So I think having the willingness to do that when needed, but not having that be the norm is probably the way it typically plays out. In my role where I'm in now, I just feel very like tied to my work. So if there's something that, you know, I'm working on or a problem I'm trying to solve, it's really hard for me to put it down. So I'll typically work on it like really early in the morning, you know, like 5 a.m. or I'll work on it on the weekends or late at night and that sort of thing. And it's not something that's required. I think there's a real flexibility around the hours you work as long as you're meeting the need and you are not a bottleneck in any way. So some people need a lot of time to get something done. Some people work fast, you know, so I think there's some variation there, but I wouldn't say it's one of those jobs where, you know, every waking moment you're having to work, you're having to be accessible, you're having to check your phone and that sort of thing. Like it does provide space. And I think if you work for a company that understands, I think Rocket Matter was great at this, like there needs to be a work-life balance, right? Like people are going to do their best work when they are energized and when they are refreshed and when they are having meaningful experiences outside of work.
Yeah, no, okay. So, well, you said something that kind of like caught my ear a little bit, but which is that like, it sounds like you're engaged with your work to the point that you're almost like, not voluntarily, but like, you can't help but kind of like chew on these problems, like maybe at night and after hours, right? That's not like a requirement, but it's just how engaged you are with the actual work.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, that's a good thing. That means like kind of a high level of engagement and like, you know.
Yeah. And I think if you really enjoy what you're doing, it shouldn't feel like work, right? Like there's definitely aspects of what we do that's kind of burdensome and can be intense. But that's what I always tell my kids is like, hey, find something you love, because then going to work is not like work. It's something you would do even if you weren't working, you know?
So you feel pretty lucky then that you stumbled upon this?
Yeah, I feel super lucky. I really do. I think it's such a cool space to be in. And, you know, it's changed so much since I first started doing it, but it's never lost any of that fulfillment. And I think part of it for me is like, you know, you're an artist, you want to create a great work of art, you want to create, you know, a portrait bust or a painting, and you have that sense of completion and fulfillment in that. Like, I don't create art like that anymore. I get all of that fulfillment out of building software.
You know, one of the things also about it is that it does like kind of have, it impacts others. People, you know what I mean? Like when like thousands of people use your software and it lasts a long time. You know, it has staying power. You're creating something that people are interacting with. So,
yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because it's almost, you know, you have a built-in audience. Like, you know, I've had art shows where, you know, maybe 25 people, 30 people come to the opening, you know, but, you know, you're building a piece of software and there's like a million people who use it. Like, your audience is baked in, man. Like, a lot of people are going to see what you're doing and are going to experience it and hopefully benefit from it.
Now, so we started to get into a little bit of work-life stuff. So let's peel that a little bit back. On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to be able to hit a typical family dinner on a given day?
Oh, I'd say 10. I mean, yeah, even if I'm consumed with work, like I can always hit pause and spend time with the family as far as that, to that level, you know?
You know what's so funny about this is that you hear about like people like not able to make the family dinners and stuff like that. But then you learn about how like Steven Spielberg like wrapped up shooting at 6 o'clock so he could go eat with his family, or like Barack Obama always snuck in a 45-minute workout. So it's like, you know, there are people with some pretty big time jobs that are able to make it happen. But that's great. Yep. What about this one? What about the next level of engagement? This is the next test. And I know, and actually I kind of know the answer to this because I know you, but scale of 1 to 10, how able are you to be able to coach a soccer team or little league team?
I'm coaching one right now, Larry.
Okay, so high.
So yeah, that answers the question. And again, I think it's all about trade-offs. You know, I have made that commitment to be able to do that, but I do that under the assumption that I may have to work on the weekends. I may have to work a couple hours early in the morning, an hour or two early at, or later at night, but I'm willing to make those trade-offs, and the space to do that is there and the support is there as well. Like I said, as long as you are getting done what you need to and you're hitting your deadlines and that sort of thing.
So, I mean, I'm sure that there are certain people who might be better for this job than others. Like, so who would you think would be like a great fit for this job? And like, also, who do you think like should like not do this job at all? Like, who would be miserable in this kind of work?
As far as who should do it, I think people who are sort of inherently curious and have an interest in technology, I think that's probably one of the most important traits to a good designer, and somebody who has empathy and is willing to understand and put themselves in the shoes of someone in a completely different experience. I think those are traits and qualities that are really important. As far as who shouldn't do it, I think people who are maybe very like black and white, you know, and maybe someone in more of like finance or accounting or something like that, where the answers are very clear cut, because in our line of work, it's not clear cut. And a lot of times what you think is going to work doesn't work. And even what you're rooting for to work doesn't work. And, you know, it's surprising. So it forces you to experiment and be willing to be wrong and be willing to change things.
That's very interesting, because I remember there is a degree of humility that goes along with this job or other design jobs too. I think we should probably point out is that you have to be able to present things to people, your stakeholders, and you have to be able to hear criticism. You have to be able to divorce your ego from the design you're putting forth. And would you agree with that?
Totally. Yeah, 100%. And it can be tough. It can really be tough, because you can fall in love with your designs, and that's the cardinal sin. Like, you can't do that. Like, you have to be willing to. And I will say that is something art school kind of prepared me for, because critiques were something that were intentionally brutal and intentionally like penal. So I was used to having something that I poured a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to being ripped to shreds. So that was something that helped me. But yeah, I think you're spot on with that.
Wow. Okay. So now what about the future, right? You know, is this the kind of thing that are you concerned? I guess the first question is it hard to find people to do this job now? And then B is, what do you think is in the future for this profession, given how AI is developing?
I think it's hard to find good people, but I think that's probably the answer for any profession, right? Like, I think there's a multitude of people. It's funny. I find that product design is typically like a pivot career. A lot of people who I know and who are really good at it started in another line of work and figured out they didn't like it and wanted to try something different and landed on product design or UX design. So I think that's kind of interesting. I happen to come across that quite a bit. But yeah, so I think there's a lot of people who are interested in it, but I do think it's evolving pretty rapidly and things are changing quite significantly. I mean, you know, our design team at Vanica has gone, you know, in the last 6 months from, you know, handing off static Figma designs and prototypes to handing off like pull requests. You know, like, we're designing in the code more and more every day, and it's really transformed and blurred the lines of, you know, who does what and what those sort of silos are in the workplace and in the like software development lifecycle. So it's been fascinating. And for someone like me who has a little bit of a history and a background in code and really likes playing around with the code, it's quite awesome. I really enjoy it. But, you know, getting other people on board who maybe aren't as technical is still very possible, and it is something that we've really been pushing towards, you know, at Vanica, where I am now.
So let me just reiterate that. So, you know, it sounds like, if anything, that the advancements with like Claude Code and these other kind of like coding techniques is, you know, advantage UX designer as opposed to advantage coder. Like, it almost is like now you can, the tool that you were describing to design Figma, right? You're taking it a step further now, and you're actually able to like develop some working code along with your designs. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And there's tons of tools out there, your Lovables, your Figma makes, where you can prompt away and build a working functional piece of software that's built with React and modern tools, but it can be really decoupled from your actual code base, you know, and that's the step that we sort of move towards, was like really getting the designer embedded in the actual code base that we work in and creating, you know, spec files and context and skills that will help assist the transition from design and ideation into actual working code in a way that's much more meaningful and makes that handoff a lot more valuable, where that code is, you know, being checked over. It's not being like thrown out and completely redone, you know?
So I'm a big fan of this career. I think it's such a great career. I mean, you know, cars are becoming like basically computers, like robotics is emerging, all these, just it's taken over. Like there's going to be more and more need for people to design interfaces, I believe. And people are good with people who have a modicum of design skills. It's a great career, I think, for them. How do people like get started? What do you look for when you hire? I mean, there's all these like boot camps, there's college majors, there's college minors, there's Coursera, there Google has its own good like online course. Like, how would you recommend somebody like getting started in this?
You know, obviously if you're young and you have an interest in it, there are, you know, paths in higher education to follow. If you're beyond that part of your life or your journey, there's still, like you said, tons of boot camps. I think for me, it's like, jump in. Like it's never been easier to jump in and start pulling together and building a piece of software and solving problems. And I think that's what I look for when, you know, interviewing or hiring, is I want to see the work that someone's done. I want to see how they think about problems. And sometimes you would need experience in an actual company to get that, right? But now I don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot you can do just out on your own to show how you think, what your skills and strengths are, and how you think about solving problems. So that would be my advice, is like, roll your sleeves up and jump into it. It's never been easier to do that. Any questions you have, like at this point, knowledge is free. Everything's at your fingertips, and there's really very little roadblocks or obstacles between you and, you know, the ability to create something awesome.
That's awesome, Ed. Thanks so much, man. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, no, this was great. Appreciate it, Larry.
So if you're listening to the podcast and you like what you heard, please like it and share it with your friends. And if you can, be grateful for something today.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.